Thanks very much, Angela. So we're back to the theme of violence in the workplace, which is a recurring theme this morning, which is good that we're talking about it, not good that it happens. We have no commercial relationships to disclose. We published a study, it was in Occupational and Environmental Medicine about a year ago, reporting on cross-sectional analyses of data from our nursing home study, showing that nursing home workers who reported recent physical assaults at work had higher prevalences of musculoskeletal symptoms than those who had not recently been assaulted, which to our knowledge was the first time that this association actually had been reported. It was a cross-sectional study, so we re-examined this association in prospective study, prospective data from the same population. This data set covers 18 nursing homes, which are all part of a single company, all in the eastern United States. I'm reporting on data from three consecutive annual surveys that were distributed to all direct care workers in these facilities, surveys that were distributed and collected at work. There was no formal release time. Some people did them on lunch breaks. Some people took them home and brought them back the next day. Subjects were compensated for their time and effort. The key survey items are those that you can see. So there's a single question about physical assault by a actually resident, it should say, resident's visitor or family member during work time. The number of occasions that this happened within the previous 3 months. And this question was asked in each of the three annual surveys. And then in a separate part of the survey, there were questions about musculoskeletal symptoms using a body map in which we obtained information about symptoms in these four body areas, low back, shoulder, wrist, hand, and knees. So I'm going to be reporting on any musculoskeletal symptoms, yes, no, the number of body areas affected, which is 3 or 4 versus 0 to 2, severity of symptoms, moderate, severe, or extreme versus less than that, and also whether pain was experienced as interfering with work. We had very good response rates. Over 70% of staff who were counted up by the facility, the denominator problem actually is an interesting one in nursing homes, but close to 90% of people who were actually physically on the facility during the weeks that we were there with our surveys. And as you can see, it's a fairly large database covering all three surveys. Demographics are pretty much what you would expect in this sector. We focused on the surveys, the workers who provided all three surveys. So that brought the number down quite a lot to 344. There's a fair amount of turnover in this sector. And again, the breakout by job group is about what you would expect and consistent with employment in this company. And the demographics and so on were all pretty similar to the full study population. So over half of the survey respondents had at least one physical assault in the 3 months preceding the survey. And over a quarter of them had experienced more than three assaults in that three-month period. This is in the baseline survey. And about three-quarters of them reported musculoskeletal symptoms at any of the four sites that we asked about, any one or more. And you can see these descriptive data. So this table shows by number of assaults at baseline, grouped as 0, 1 to 2, or 3 or more, the frequency of pain outcomes in the follow-up surveys, the one-year follow-up and the two-year follow-up. So you can see that there is, for each of, if you look down each column, you can see the increasing prevalence of this pain outcome with increasing number of assaults just prior to the baseline survey. So for example, pain in any body area in the one-year follow-up went from 57% to 62% to 84% with increasing number of salts a year earlier. And at the two-year survey, prevalence of pain in any body area went from 58% to 76% to 80% with increasing number of assaults 2 years prior to that. And it's a very consistent picture. Each of these columns shows an increasing trend, basically, with pain at these various pain outcomes in the follow-up data relative to assaults in the baseline survey. So this is with modeling of those data for the one-year follow-up. So again, we have number of assaults at baseline, and then we have the same four outcomes, pain in any body area, widespread pain, that's 3 to 4 sites versus 0 to 2, pain intensity of moderate or greater, and pain interfering with work. So these are the multivariable regressions adjusted for all the things that you see at the bottom of the slide, and again showing that there's an increase in risk with the number of assaults that had been reported in the survey 1 year earlier. This is prevalence of intense pain by two years later. By job group, because we were concerned, we actually had a prior hypothesis that the nursing aides were bearing more of the brunt of this problem, since they're the ones who are really in intimate and almost continuous contact with residents in this work setting. And the bottom line here is that actually, from these survey data, at least there's not really much difference between the nursing aides and the other job groups, the RNs and LPNs and PTs and so on, which was surprising, but important to document. So you can see slightly lower, prevalences in some cases for the nursing aides, but the overall trends are very, very similar between the nursing aides and all workers. And so this is, now the colored bars are prevalence of intense pain by how many times, how many of the surveys an individual reported having been assaulted. So the no exposure to violence means in baseline 1 year and 2 year follow-up surveys, this person reported no assault in any of these three surveys. The dark red bars are a violent assault reported on one of those three, any one of those three, and all the way to the persistent exposure, which means having reported assault on all three of those surveys. So it's a different way to look at kind of the intensity of the exposure or the cumulative history of assaults over time and the effect on intensity of musculoskeletal pain after 2 years. And here we've done this multivariable modeling of two-year pain outcomes, the same that you saw before, looking now at how many surveys. So this no occasional frequent persistent is that 0, 1, 2, 3, how many surveys the person reported having been assaulted. And again, you can see that there's generally an upward trend with the more years the person reported having been assaulted, the more of these pain outcomes they were experiencing. So there seems to be a pretty robust and consistent relationship here between having been assaulted and experiencing musculoskeletal symptoms. These data are for long-term exposure to violence, again, non-occasional, frequent, persistent at the bottom, and just showing the prevalence of continuous pain outcomes at all three surveys. So as you can see, we've cut these data a lot of different ways, and we get a really very consistent pattern of increasing risk. So increasing continuous pain with more exposure to violence, increasing continuous intensive pain, increasing interference with sleep, increasing interference with work, continuous widespread pain. The same relationship really stands out in all of these different analyses. Obviously, there are some There are some strengths and weaknesses. So one concern is, of course, that assault frequency is obtained by self-report. We don't have any way of collecting objective confirmation. Many of these assaults don't result in a physical injury that would be an OSHA recordable incident. The data, on the other hand, the data were obtained before these symptom outcomes that I'm showing you. So it's not a problem of people being over-reporting the symptoms or the assaults because they're telling us about both at the same time. There's this time lag between when the assault was reported and when the musculoskeletal symptoms are obtained. So in that sense, we think the prospective design largely removes the temporal ambiguity of the cross-sectional findings that we published last year. The possible mechanisms is, I think, a really interesting question. Those of you who know me know I've been looking at physical ergonomics and musculoskeletal disorders for 25 years. There is, of course, a lot of physical effort in these jobs. These are all workplaces where a safe resident handling program has been implemented, but that certainly doesn't take away the physical nature of the work, especially that the nursing aides perform. At the same time, what we're seeing here is a difference among nurses' aides, which is associated with assault. So it suggests to, and the pattern of musculoskeletal symptoms suggests that it's not just being bruised from having been hit or bitten, that there's something broader going on. And so we're guessing that this might be about a change in pain threshold that's associated with anxiety, fear of assault, the mental health consequences of having to, Jen was talking about assault as a part of the job. That's very much the attitude in the nursing home sector as well. And nursing home aides in particular are given to understand that if they get assaulted, it's because they didn't manage the resident properly. So there's a lot of blaming the victim in this situation. And so it seems plausible, although this is obviously just my speculation, that it's the mental health consequences of the assault and the fear of the assault and feeling unable to report it or to try to have the environment become safer in some way that maybe is affecting people's pain thresholds. Certainly, workplace assault is not in the literature commonly recognized as a potential risk factor for musculoskeletal symptoms, so it makes us curious about where else are we missing this in all the jobs where violence is an ongoing issue. And certainly the overall high persistence or recurrence, however you want to look at it, of assaults in these workplaces needs quite serious attention. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Laura. We have time for questions for Laura.
Yeah, Bill, I guess.
So, Laura, you said that, so you dealt with the contracting factor of safe patient handling programs by saying that these institutions had programs in place. Did any of these places have any type of formalized workplace violence prevention programs?
That we're aware of, no, it's not getting attention in any of these centers. These are all part of the same company, and at the regional level, we know that there hasn't been any centralized support provided to any of the centers regarding dealing with assault. And as best as we can tell, there isn't anything happening at the center level either. Matt?
Can you talk a little more, maybe I missed it, about how you sort of assessed whether the musculoskeletal symptoms were a result of the injury that occurred at the time of the assault, or whether they were, subsequent?
Well, we don't have a way to directly. We didn't ask with the assault question what was the extent of the physical injury that resulted, unfortunately. So I don't have any direct way to answer that question. I'm more inferring from the patterns of symptoms that are being reported, that it doesn't seem as though they're all, you know, from the bites or from the kicks or whatever, that there seems to be a broader pattern of backache and shoulder pain and so on that doesn't seem to quite fit the assault pattern, but I can't answer that directly one way or the other. So we actually are redesigning this survey for another round of data collection, and that's something that we're going to try to tease out a little better. Yeah. So that's a weakness here. Yeah, Jonathan.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a very important thing, because I can tell you anecdotally, you know, like at the psych hospitals where you have major physical assaults, we've had reports of vertebrae being knocked out and knee damage, which would be consistent with what you're saying. But in the nursing home settings, we're hearing it's more like Alzheimer's dementia patients lashing out, so it might be scratching or, you know, I'm kind of surprised at the results, because I wouldn't really associate that a nursing home with, you know, the more serious outcomes of assault. So I think that would be a good thing to capture. And also, you know, just because a place, as you know, has a safe patient handling program doesn't mean that it's implemented effectively. And I'm wondering if some of the musculoskeletal pain isn't still associated with, you know, patient handling issues.
I think that's very possible. And I'm certainly not saying that program has eliminated it all. We actually... These are other papers and other conference presentations, but we've shown pretty dramatic reductions in ergonomic exposures following the implementation of the program in these same nursing homes. So we have some confidence that there's been some true benefit, but I'm sure it hasn't we know it hasn't eliminated all of the physical stresses associated with resident care. My point was that all of these data come from centers where the same program is implemented. So what we're seeing is the residual pain that's left over after that program has already been put into place. Yeah.
Uncooperative patient. So I think even when you're trying to use the mechanical lift, stories that I hear that it gets unbalanced, it falls over, and you know, it's not that uncooperative patient. I think in the mechanical lift world, there's still a lot of work to be done there. It's still a possibility to me that the violence itself is really part of the ergonomic exposure and job design, and that there's more work to be done there.
Yeah, I strongly agree. I think this is a really important point. In fact, in our surveys, in the analyses we've done of the effectiveness of the LIFT program, we actually have a question in the survey asking, I'm trying to remember exactly how it's worded, because it was we tried to be very careful about this. I think it says, you know, in a situation where someone doesn't use a LIFT, what would be the reason? And maybe a quarter of the time that question was answered, the response had to do with the resident not wanting to be handled with a mechanical device. And this is something that we've tried to talk to the nursing home company about, and they so far are very unwilling to go there. I don't completely understand why, but they really haven't... you know, we've suggested to them there could be education of residents' families to say, you know, your family member has a regular caretaker. Don't you want that person to be able to keep taking care of them? This is to protect them so that, you know. So obviously this issue is probably more likely going to come up with people with cognitive impairments or emotional difficulties who are harder to reason with when you bring the device into their room. Yeah. Thank you for that comment. Somebody, Eileen.
Yeah, so Laura, in your footnote, you indicated all the things you were controlled for, which included jobs and job stress. Clearly, very sophisticated sorting out of what else could be going on. But an earlier presenter pointed out that younger patients are more likely to leave, or clients are more likely to engage in a more serious physical violence episode than older patients. And do you have any sense of that? Because our nursing homes are more and more filled with people who we wouldn't envision to call a nursing home patient. And that's more in line with the folks that the earlier questioner asked about in terms of the site clientele. And is there a possibility that people are encountering different levels of violence? Because the recurring, the fact that the same people seem to get hurt again, it makes me wonder if there's something about their patient population.
Yeah, there are a variety of questions. I think that's right. What are the larger institutional characteristics that underlie this? We're in the process of compiling, with the company's help, sort of a catalog of features of the nursing homes, including whether they have dual diagnosis units, whether they have short-term rehab, you know, faster turnover of residents, and also they have promised us CMS data so that we could characterize the resident population in some detail, but we don't have those data yet. Yeah, yes?
My name is Robert Melton from Monash. The question that occurs to me is this problem preventable by better engineering controls, better lifting techniques, better machines that can do lifting? Is that the answer, or is that, as you mentioned, that in many cases the machine did not work?
No, I didn't say that. Actually, Kate was talking about situations in which, but my focus is not on the lifting equipment here. My focus is on the work environment features that permit assault to be happening with such high frequency and with workers feeling like they have so little recourse when it happens that perhaps they're internalizing that in a way that's injurious in other ways. Yeah, no, that's fine, thanks. Yes, in the back. Oh, Pamela, hi.
Would you consider doing a survey that had questions so, you know, they can report, like, through self-report, if they experience post-traumatic stress disorder or if they've been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, and then see what their pain reporting looks like to get deeper at that issue that you raised?
Well, I don't know if I would exact, but we do actually have a mental health scale in this same data set, and we haven't fully looked at how that, whether that's a mediating variable, but certainly that is a possibility. That's what I'm hypothesizing. That's what I'm speculating about is the mechanism. So that's a good next step. Thanks. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Laura. It is noon. Thank you, everybody. I appreciate all the speakers. Thank you.